Morning, gentlemen. May it please the court. My name is Roy Stegana, and I represent the appellant in this case, U.S. Bank. The simple issue...
How much rebuttal time, counsel?
Oh, I'm sorry. 2 minutes. Thank you for reminding me. There is a cross appeal on this as well. The basic issue is whether or not, under the facts of this case, at least, a quantum merit recovery by a trial court can be added to a mechanics lien, a statutory mechanics lien.
Counsel, let me ask you some questions.
Surely.
The trial court here basically added quantum merit to the contract price for purposes of the lien, right?
That's one way to look at it. I don't know if the court actually analyzed it in that fashion, but I guess you could say that because the court found, or on reconsideration at least, not initially, but on reconsideration, said or ruled that the quantum merit recovery could be added to the mechanics lien, whereas in its initial verdict, that was not the case. I think I've answered your question.
The answer is yes.
Yes, that's okay. but only on the second go-around.
Okay. Now, what does this record show as far as what the court believed was within that quantum merit box? And let me just clarify that question.
Sure.
Your position is that the contract price set the amount of the lien.
Correct.
The court added something else,
right,
and called it quantum merit.
Yes.
Is it your position that something else was work done on the property that was not covered either by the original contract or by any written change orders?
That's correct. That's exactly right.
Is there anything else that was within that quantum merit box?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor, no. It was for materials and labor that were, there were no change orders. It was a fixed price contract requiring change orders, and that's really the rub in the case here.
Okay.
That all of those were done without the requisite change orders.
Okay. So when all else fails, we look at the mechanics lien statute.
Right.
Okay. And that says, among other things, that contract price is defined as the amount agreed upon by the contracting parties.
Or, yes.
Now I'll get to or in a minute.
Sorry.
Okay, so your position is the amount agreed by the contracting parties, the written amount.
Fixed
in that first clause.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Now looking at the second clause, it says if no amount is agreed upon, then the customary and reasonable charge therefore.
Correct.
And that's quantum merit.
It is.
Okay. So looking at that statute, why was it incorrect for the trial court in this case to add in quantum merit?
Well, primarily because the parties did agree on a price. They agreed on a fixed price.
So you're saying essentially that because there is in this case a contract between the parties, that excludes consideration of quantum merit as part of the valid lien.
Yes, because it excludes it as part of the contract price because otherwise you're going to have a contract that requires change orders and you're going to in effect grant a recovery based to a breaching party. So it couldn't possibly be awarded under the contract, but since you had a contract that requires written change orders for any of these, let's call them quantum merit additions, extra work, materials, and labor, because of that, you have no, and because the lien statute is mechanics liens are statutory, you have to come within the contract definition of the contract price. And what the court did on reconsideration says, well, you know, we're going to interpret that, which I think is a mistake right off the bat because there was nothing ambiguous about it. But the court said, well, I'm going to interpret on reconsideration, I'm going to interpret that language to say that the change orders were only required not above what the contract says, the fixed price, the contract price, but rather above the total loan commitment, which is a different contract altogether. That's a loan contract between the lender and the builder as opposed to the owner and the builder.
Let me ask you one more question.
Sure.
In support of your reading of that lien provision, lien, yes, statute, you cite the Manka case out of Division II.
Was that, I use the other, Modern Builders?
Yes.
Yes.
Is there any other case that you cite to support your reading of the lien statute?
Yeah, I think the more recent case, Your Honor, is Colorado Structures, and I don't have the full cite. It's a 2011 case.
And Division III case.
Yeah.
Okay.
It said the same thing, that basically the quantum merit substitutes for the contract price only where, number one, changes are not contemplated. Well, we have that. We have a written contract with a change order provision, so changes are clearly contemplated by the parties if you accept that that's the contract. And then there's no agreement on price. Well, you don't get to the whether or not there's an agreement on price, until you get the change orders. That's the idea of the change orders. There was some controversy as to whether the bank was entitled to approve or disapprove the changes, and it turned out that they were.
This totally turns on whether or not there's a waiver of the written change order process, doesn't it?
I don't think so at all, Your Honor.
Then how do you deal with CKP, in which the court said, recognized that where written change orders were waived by the parties, that recovery for additional work was appropriate in quantum merit over the contract price?
I think what the court said in KCP or CKP was that because there was a waiver, we are going to award a recovery under the contract. Because otherwise, what's the significance of a waiver?
The problem with that is that they use the terms quantum merit.
Sure. They use the terms,
and they distinguish it from Mankey by saying that in Mankey, the court disregarded the entire contract, not the excess charges.
Right. See, I think the problem, though, is this, that if you get to the point where you don't have a change order, and let's say there's a waiver of it, you still have to come up with a price. You still have to come up with an agreement. So it's really sort of a two-step process. You've got the change order, but then there's an approval process that goes on that takes place as well. So I think that the
isn't the rule there that where the work is done and the material furnished, it's the reasonable value?
It sure is, but it's limited to the purpose of getting the actual price. But here, what we have is you have the parties having absolutely contemplated changes like this in advance, putting it in the contract. And so you, as I said, you can't add that to the mechanics lien statute unless you come in into the language of the statute, which requires and focuses on the contract price. The situation in which a quantum merit recovery could be added to the mechanics lien is limited. It's limited, as the court in Mankey said, and it's limited, as the court in Colorado Structure said, where changes are not contemplated and there's no agreement on price. But, of course, that's the case with respect to the extras. But, again, the parties did contemplate changes. They did have a fixed price. They agreed upon a price, and they said, okay, this is your contract price. It's not going to change unless you do change orders. That brings up kind of the really odd factual situation here, which is where Topline's president testified that, well, that written contract, that was just a ruse. That was just a ruse to get the financing, because I have no intention. That wasn't our agreement. Our agreement was, as he called it, an open book or a cost plus. He used that just to get the financing, to facilitate the financing. Then Topline used that same written contract in a summary judgment motion to get his priority determination, used it again to get a default against my client before that was vacated. It was not vacated, but we were allowed to participate anyway. And then at trial says, no, that contract, that's not our contract. That was just a ruse to get to get the bank to pay here. So we have a case in equity. They've invoked equity, and they clearly have unclean hands. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. Greg Tillian, I'm on behalf of Topline Builders. I had a cross appeal. Part of that issue was whether U.S. Bank even has standing to be questioning most of what's being argued here today.
Well, it's contesting the priority of your lien, so I don't understand why they don't have standing to do that.
Well, they're also contesting issues of the contractual relationship between Topline and Bovenkamp.
But as to the ability to contest the priority of your lien, I think that there can't be any rational argument that they don't have standing for that.
I understand that portion of
it. Okay, let me ask you this question.
Okay.
The other side has just said that we should read the lien statute so as to not allow quantum merit recovery, essentially because there is a contract here. What's your response?
Well, I think this court already decided that in CKP versus because there they had a contract, they had specifications for written change orders. Those weren't followed, weren't done. And the contractor had walked off the job and then later filed a lien for not only the contract amount but the changes that were done without change orders. And the court ultimately decided that not only does the contractor obtain the remaining contract amount agreed upon, but the change order or the extras that were done in Quantum Merowith. And one of the main issues there was whether he was entitled to liquidated damages or prejudgment interest on that, and the court said no, because it had to use its discretion to figure out what the amount of Quantum Merowith recovery
was. So your position, as I understand it, is it doesn't make any difference here that there is an existing contract for purposes of getting Quantum Merowith as well?
That's correct. My position is in the lien statute, it's you have an owner that requests work to be done on their property, and only the owner can bind that property. And the lien statute says any person furnishing labor, materials, or equipment for the improvement of real property shall have a lien. It's mandatory for the improvement of for the contract price of such services.
And does that also address the priority of that lien vis-a-vis another lender?
Yeah, because I think it's in 06-1, it says it shall be prior to any lien, mortgage, deed, or trust which shall attach the land after or was unrecorded at time of commencement. And that read all together is providing the contractor a lien at the time that they begin construction over and above any subsequent deed of trust, mortgage, loan, or other lien. And the purpose and intent that was done behind this was to protect contractors, suppliers, material men from later mortgages, because they can't file a lien until later in the process when work has been done but they haven't been paid. And that's what this case is. Work commenced in February, I think, of 2008, and then they didn't get paid. It was 14 months later. Well, in that intervening time, they're not filing a lien, but U.S. Bank filed a deed of trust 8 months late or 7 months after work had commenced. So the lien statute's supposed to protect. It's a look-back priority, and it's to protect these type of situations. The other thing that I argue in this case is that U.S. Bank had actual notice that Topline was working on this property and had been working. And as the Johnson case has specified back in long ago in the 20s, if a bank or mortgage lender has actual notice and then provides a loan despite knowing that construction had commenced, they suffer the loss. The bank does. They are in the best position to protect themselves. They, the bank, can require lien releases, subordination agreements, or they can choose not to provide funds. Here, the conclusions of law that are unchallenged specify that U.S. Bank knew and had actual knowledge that Topline had commenced construction. In fact, the first draw was $450,000 that was paid to Topline. U.S. Bank knew that there was a substantial amount of money going to the first deed of trust or the to Topline, who had been working on it. And under the lien statute, Topline has priority. And I remind the court, there has been no challenge to the conclusions of law that have specified that Topline's lien is in first position and prior to U.S. Bank's deed of trust. So, under the lien statute, U.S. Bank's trying to bifurcate this. It's either a contract, written contract, or it's Quantum Merowith. And that's not how the lien statute reads. It is, according to the court in CKP and versus GRS Construction, it is work that's been requested by the owner. And that can be under a contract plus Quantum Merowith. And here, again, there is no error assigned to the conclusions of law that Topline was entitled to recover in Quantum Merowith, all the extras. Those extras were essentially $80,000. The remaining contract price was around $24,000. And those together is what has been granted to Topline at the trial court level. I understand that there's the argument that U.S. Bank was required to be notified of any changes under the loan procedures agreement. The loan procedures agreement does not specify that they had the right to object or approve such changes, only notice requirement. And the facts of the case were that at the end, Topline did provide a list of all the changes to the U.S. Bank representative, and that representative's response was, if this is an issue you're having with the owner, there's nothing we can do. You need to go back to the owner. And that's what Topline did.
Now, didn't your client sign that second agreement? Weren't they a party to it? Did they have an obligation to give notice directly to the bank?
Well, that's, I mean, you're talking about the loan procedures agreement, I presume. What it reads is funds in excess of the loan amount needed to complete construction are to be deposited with the lender. The issue has been paragraph 9. If change orders occur during the course of construction requiring additional funds, the lender must be notified and those monies deposited with lender into your construction escrow account. The way I read that is, well, first, if it's in excess of the loan amount, the bank needs to be notified of those changes. Notified. Not notification and approval or rejection or anything like that. And in addition to that, if it's in excess of the loan amount, you, it says, or it deposit those funds into your escrow account. Well, Topline doesn't have an escrow account. It is Bovenkamp, the owner, and the person on the mortgage that has the escrow account. And so it is not Topline's responsibility to be notifying U.S. Bank. It is the Bovenkamp, the owner, and the person on the loan that is responsible for notifying U.S. Bank and depositing additional funds beyond the loan agreement or the loan amount. And obviously, the purpose behind that is the bank doesn't want to be stuck with a partially built home. They are lending money, say it's $500,000, for a home that's going to be finished. And if the owner starts making changes that are going to be racking up the amount of the loan, and it's going to exceed the loan amount, and there's not additional funds set aside to assure that construction is complete, the bank's going to have to step in with a 80% finished house, potentially, and try and finish it with their own funds. That's the reason behind these loan agreements and depositing additional funds beyond the loan amount, is to assure that the house or whatever improvement is complete within the loan amount. And in this instance, that wasn't even an issue because the loan amount was $995,000. Contract plus change orders amount was $940,000. It's below what they agreed to lend. I would ask that this court uphold the decision of the trial court and find that the total amount of approximately $105,000 is prior to U.S. Bank's deed of trust.
Just a few quick points. First of all, with respect to the claim about notice of that the work had already begun, that's certainly true, and the party simply ignored that. But there certainly was no notice on the record in this case of extra work having been done. The construction was probably 2 months or so underway at the time. The one thing I want to point out and emphasize, though, is this, that the question here is not whether Topline should get paid for its extra work, because it has a judgment against the owner, against Bovenkamp. That's not been challenged, it's not been appealed from. So there's a judgment lien. So the real question is, should the mechanics lien, or the deed of trust, rather, be ahead of that? That's what it really boils down to. And so what you have here, you have a contract, you have a breached contract. You have a contract that was basically a ruse to get the financing that's been breached and repudiated. And so Topline says, okay, well, now we want Quantum Merritt. And the way they did that was interesting. You'll see that originally this was a contract case entirely. They moved to amend their complaint maybe 2 months before trial. And that invokes RCW 60.04.091, which I didn't get a chance to talk about, but it's in the brief. So what it basically says is that if you have a lien claim, and then you amend it during the, and you start a foreclosure action as Topline did, and then you amend that lien claim during the course of the litigation, that amendment cannot be deemed to adversely affect impact third
but
parties.
But the lien wasn't amended. The lien stayed the same as filed before litigation. It was just the theory in the pleadings as to the basis for recovery.
Well, it's a different claim, and the statute says if you're going to amend the lien claim. And so, you know, you have, because up until that point in time, the lien claim was based on contract, and the contract was a breach. And now they're trying to, you know, try Plan B, basically. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.